Welcome to a new episode of the Saltwater Euphoria Podcast. This is your go-to sport fishing podcast, where we will cover all things from fishing, boats, tackle, and anything else saltwater related.
Well done, gentlemen.
Every day is an adventure on the water. We'll be sharing our experiences, stories, tips, and passion for fishing.
Gonna need a bigger boat.
Oh, think bigger, my friend. Think bigger.
Here is your host, Captain Ricky Wheeler.
Welcome to episode 33 of the Saltwater Euphoria Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. And for those of you that have been longtime listeners, thank you for the continued support. For those of you that are just tuning in for the first time, I hope you enjoy this podcast and definitely check out some of the other ones. I am currently here in Stuart, Florida, getting all packed up and ready. We're leaving tomorrow for the Bahamas and going to spend a little time wahoo fishing down there and make our way to the Dominican Republic, where we'll be February, March, April, and early May. So I am stoked, ready to get going. We moved the boat from Charleston to Stuart, Florida this past weekend, and it wasn't the greatest of weather, but it worked out great. We had a good move. Of course, as always, some stuff broke. My rudder indicator went bad and also had a little issue with the autopilot pump taking a crap. So that was fun. So we steered the whole way through the dark and got here. But got here safe. Everything went smooth. And just wanted to give a big shout out to my last guest on the podcast, Rich Halls. He helped work me through the rudder indicator issue and got that all squared away. And luckily I had a spare autopilot pump on the boat, but I made the biggest mistake by not checking it when I bought it, and it ended up having different fittings to fit into the line. So trying to find the fittings I needed here in Florida, in one of the best places in the world to get boat parts, actually proved to be tricky. But we did get it, worked out good, and we're all back together. But also we had the ice maker crap out, we had a fuel leak, and just, man, one thing after another. Just how it goes, a boat moving, and I just can't stress enough having spare parts on board. And also a good network of friends, and I just wanted to really touch on how awesome the sport fishing community is. And thank you to all of those who helped me. I reached out, you know, people that live down here or spend time in Florida really pointed me in the right direction, because I don't spend a whole lot of time here. But you really can get anything and everything for boats down here, from Fort Pierce all the way down to Miami. It's unbelievable amount of places that sell all kinds of things for boats, and also all the great specialists. So thank you to everybody that helped me, keeping me going here, especially the short time crunch. We did happen to fish a few days here in Stuart, and it was very, very slow. Sounded like it was very slow for the fleet. It was especially slow for us. But we did bend the rod and caught a couple mahi, some blackfin tunas, a couple kingfish, and then barracudas got us pretty good a couple times, and kings destroyed one of my dredges, so that was fun. But just getting excited, ready to make the move here. We're all packed up. I went to Baitmasters yesterday, and we loaded up on a lot of bait to get us through these next 4 to 5 months of fishing, and I am stoked. Thank you, Baitmasters. You guys always have the best bait, hands down. I always get Baitmasters whenever I can, and whenever I'm in Florida, I always run down there and get it myself. On a quick side note, I just want to throw in there that I definitely get a lot of people reaching out to me asking about mates or looking for mates, and also have a lot of people that are aspiring mates or also have some experience and are mates that are looking for work. It's always tricky to job placement, because in the world of sport fishing, each job is so different, yet the same. So best way I figure to do it is I have a job board at saltwatereuphoria.com on our website, and I am really working hard at getting it set up even better, and I have more people to add to it than what I have right now. But if you are looking for a mate or a crewman, definitely look at saltwatereuphoria.com and click on job board and see who we have there. They have their cover letters, resumes, and photos of who they are, so you can take a good look at their resume and figure out if they'd be right for you, and you can contact them directly yourself. It's free, no charge. And it's, you know, a good way to try to get your name out there. So if you are an aspiring mate or are a mate looking for work, reach out to me by emailing us at podcast@saltwatereuphoria.com, and we will get it up on our website job board as soon as possible. Also, I'm still working hard on courses, trying to get more courses on our website at saltwatereuphoria.com on the courses tab. I'm planning to do some updates to the Wahoo course, which I'm really proud of. I love that one. I put a lot of information in there. There's a lot of information in there even beyond Wahoo fishing, like ways to use planers. There's so many different ways to attack that, and I have that in there as well as many other things. And throughout all the others as well, the boat moving, the Mid-Atlantic Tuna course, and the dredge fishing course, which is 101. So again, saltwater-euphoria.com and the courses tab, you can see what we have in there, and I plan to add a few more here throughout the next few months. So some of you have been following the 38 Topaz rebuild that we have going on, and it is currently in Southport, North Carolina, with Mark of MV Boats, and he is getting it ready to get into the shed. And he took the top off the other day, and we got the bottom blasted, so we wanted to make sure there were no blisters and make sure we did have the sound haul that we expected to have. So now we got great haul. Mechanicals are good. We'll put a barrier coat on the bottom, and she'll be good to go. But trying to get her in the shed so Mark can start doing some gutting, get the CAD designs all set, and then start building out the interior straight into the exterior. So I'm excited to see the build come together. For those of you that want to follow it and want to see what's going on, you can always keep up with my stories on my Instagram. My Instagram's at Captain Ricky Wheeler, for those of you that don't know. And in my save stories or my highlighted stories, there's one that says Refit 38 Topaz. And that's the one that you can keep up with all the updates for the Topaz. And I'll consistently keep putting pictures and updates through my story and through that save story. For those of you that want to follow that and follow the rebuild, it's definitely going to be really cool boat when we get done with it. I'm really excited about the process and have a great group of guys supporting the project. But anyway, we're about to leave tomorrow and start chugging to the Bahamas. Just going to take our time, get there, conserve some fuel, and hopefully fish 3 or 4 days there while we're in Cat Island, and then kind of make our way over to San Salvador and see if we can't find that 100-pounder that definitely lives there. I know there was one caught there recently. It was a 113, so congrats to the crew that grabbed that one. That is an awesome feat. Catching one over 100 pounds is just so awesome. I love catching big wahoos. It's a lot of fun. Man, they scream some drag. So I may have to get over there, spend a little time there. It's been quite a few years since I've spent any time in San Salvador, but it's going to be a quick trip. Just going to do a little fishing 4 or 5 days there and then hope the weather's good and make our way to Cap Cana, Dominican Republic. I'm really excited for Dominican Republic because I've only ever spent time there going to and from the Southern Caribbean, like going from Grenada or Curacao, and we would always stop there and refuel, and if we had a little time, we'd stop and fish a couple days because hard not to when you're in Cap Cana. But I'm amped, and especially that time of year, you know, March, April, May, white marlin bite gets really good right out front there on the rocks and the shallows. It's just kind of a cool fishery. It reminds me of what we used to fish growing up in New Jersey, and really enjoy it. And yeah, it's a good place to get a grand slam that time of year. You know, white marlin fishing, the sails are mixed in, and never know when a blue marlin's going to jump you. And also the mahi are there. So I'm very, very excited to spend a good 2.5-3 months there just learning it and enjoying being there. In this episode here, I am going to explain the story behind how Euphoria came to be and how I got it in my possession, because it seems I get asked the question a lot. Of where I found it and what it is and more about the boat and also if it's mine or if I run it for somebody else and X, Y, and Z things. So I figured I'd clear it up here and tell everybody a story because it's kind of a wild one. It has certainly been a roller coaster ride. But long story short, where it all started was my good friend Chris Van Grieken, who was actually on the first episode of this podcast talking about DIY boat building and how he built his 40-foot down-east style sport fishing boat. He fished with us on Exile in Grenada for the tournaments, and that's how I got to know him. And one of his friends in Curacao, because he's from Curacao, had this beautiful 60-foot sport fish, and they asked me to come down and be the captain for it for the Aruba tournament, which was, back then, was a presidential cup or the presidential challenge. I can't remember which it was called, but it was in October and typically really, really good bill fishing. So I was like, yeah, absolutely. And I was freelancing at the time. I think it was 2015. Anyway, went down, ran the boat, met the owner of the boat, Barry, and his friends, like RT and Chris and a couple other guys. And everybody was just so nice. I had such a great time, and I had only ever fished Aruba one time before on the 45 Hatters Exile back in 2010. And where the fish were for that tournament turns out was not where the fish were for this tournament in 2015. So anyway, fish were our pre-fish day where we had fished in 2010. And in the 4 hours we fished, a quick shakedown trip, we did catch and release the blue marlin. So like, all right, cool. It seemed right. We also had a couple mahi. So the fishing's good. It was right on the north side of the island there. And like 1,000 to 2,000 feet of water. And I was like, all right, we're dialed in. I'm ready for this. So day one of the tournament comes. We are the only ones in this area. And by midday, I'm starting to hear the bites turn on. They're releasing fish. And I am out to lunch. And I end up running out. And we don't really find anything. Long story short, I sucked that day. I didn't get us any bites. I was terrible. I was lost. readapted, rearranged things. And day two was much better. I think we released 5 whites and a sail. And maybe had a slam that day, actually. And then the last day, we had a very good day, too. But the fish that we needed, we hooked just 1 minute after time. And it was just kind of chaotic. And we ended up just missing jumping into third place. But it was a lot of fun. And the boat was great. I was like, man, this boat is awesome. It doesn't burn a lot of fuel. It rides really well. And down in the Southern Caribbean there, it can get quite choppy in it. And that tournament was no exception. It was rough, and this boat handled it great, fished really well, and like I said, just had a great time with the guys. And I ended up getting invited back the next year. We did the Bonaire tournament. Come to find out, we had like a cutlass bearing problem, and a strut was kind of out of whack, so we definitely had a singing going on that you could hear above the water, and we ended up sucking in that tournament, and you know, things just weren't right. But anyway, it's just always a boat that I really love. Very fast. I mean, it's built in 2000, and she cruises 35, 36 on the high end, and 40-plus knot boat. It's super impressive, really well built, and it's a precision. It was built in Baltimore, Maryland, and I believe the gentleman who built it, he obviously did a phenomenal job and seen his pay a lot of attention to detail to the build, and he built two boats for himself, and I think he was building a third and sold the hull, but that's just what I'm told. I'm not 100% sure, so don't quote me on that. But anyway, time goes by, and I was running a 65-foot Paul Man called Exile 65. The owner was on his way to get out of the boat, and I flew to Curacao to try to secure this boat to see if the owner would be still willing to sell it. And as I always told him, I was like, hey, this would be a phenomenal, you know, high-end charter boat, especially for New Jersey, and this is years ago. And the boat's fast, it rides well, it's economical for a 60-footer. And he was like, why don't you buy it from me? And I was like, I can't afford this thing, you know, $1 million sport, more than $1 million plus sport fish. So worked out an arrangement at the time. I was planning on partnering with the owner of Exile, but things just didn't quite work out there and did not happen. So I ended up just taking all on myself, and Barry was gracious enough to make everything happen and has been, you know, a big help for me throughout the whole process. But anyway, we came to a good agreement, and I've been running this boat since then. And it's just been a phenomenal boat, but not without a ton of blood, sweat, and tears, which any of you that know me or follow me definitely know all the challenges that I've been through. But anyway, we made a deal end of May in 2019, and in June 2019 hauled the boat out, because if I was going to get the boat, I wanted to do some work to it. Needed a little bit of work, and I needed some updating. I wanted to add a mezzanine, and you know how things go. You get a boat to boatyard and start digging. Once you find something, you just want to make everything perfect. So you're already there, so we did everything. Curacao Marine Zone did a good job. They tore up the deck, took the fuel tank out, and just got everything kind of prepped and ready through the summer while I was running a boat at home called Wish You Were Here, the 61 Viking at that time. And at the end of that season, which was mid-September, I flew down to Curacao, and I was going to just get the projects, you know, back underway and rolling. And I had already ordered a new strut to fix that one strut, the new cutlass bearings, cleaned up all the spray rails and glassed in anything that didn't look right, and just made everything super perfect from the hull all the way up. And put a new transducer, new electronics. And from that time all the way through December 2019 was just strictly rebuilding the boat. We were working anywhere from 10 to 14 hours a day. We had floodlights out, working at night till 9 o'clock, and it was just repeat every single day. And we did that for 2.5 months, 3 months, and put in a mezzanine, put in a teak deck, added a bow thruster, added a second generator, did some engine tweaks. The interior was in great shape and still is. It shows so nice, really pretty cherry. I mean, it's definitely a very pretty boat inside and out. And just cleaned everything up best we could. We got the helm all squared away, where all the controls are, and really did a lot of updates to it. And a big shout out to my friend Chris for, you know, he was finishing up his boat build at the time that I was working on this, and he dropped everything and helped me by giving me some of his helpers, and they were phenomenal and very helpful. And we used his warehouse to basically build my whole mezzanine in pieces, and then took it. And then I had Mark from MV Boats, who is doing all the work on the tow pads for us. He's the one that did the CAD designs for me and got me the stainless steel boxes made for my drink box, and got my freezer all set up, dropped that in. And he just was very helpful with everything and got us all the materials. And given the fact that I was in time crunch and we were behind, I had him and his employee at the time, Ray, come down, and they spent 2 weeks with me, Chris, and some helpers, and just went to town on the mezzanine and knocked it out. You know, we were doing three to four coats of fairing and sanding every single day there for a little while just to get everything perfect. And it just turned out beautifully. I mean, I was really happy with the way the boat turned out. And it's gorgeous and still is today. So that was all that. That's a long story short. And if you're interested in that kind of stuff, you can see in my save stories, my highlights, the Euphoria refit or retrofit. I can't remember exactly what I call it. But you can see the whole process of what we did throughout a very short period of time there. Really knocked out a lot of projects and brought this boat, up to date with the times, and everything turned out great, and super, super happy with that. But yeah, you check that story out and see everything that was done. But we finished that up, and then we took a trip to Grenada, and actually lucky enough that at that time we were able to spend a couple days in Aves Islands, which is a string of islands that is actually owned by Venezuela. And Chris kind of had an in there, and Chris and his family did the move with me from there to Grenada. But on the way, we stopped at Aves and did some conch diving and wahoo fishing, and it was phenomenal wahoo fishing, and just beautiful, beautiful little set of islands there. Kind of reminded me a lot of the Bahamas, and just absolutely gorgeous, and I feel very lucky to have had a chance to see that. Not many people I know for sure have ever seen Aves, and it was very pretty. Wish we had more time there, and wish it was easier to get in there now. But anyway, we continued, got to Grenada, and started doing some fishing there, and linked up with my good friend and mate, Sandy, from Grenada there, and he was working with me, and fishing was fantastic, as Grenada usually is, January, February, March. So everything was going great. Working out some little boat kinks because she hadn't been run for most of the year. So it was a good, nice little start to 2020 there. And actually had found me down. My dad came down. But it was just a lot of fun. And I ended up, there was a little gap in my schedule, like a two-week gap in early March. So I figured I'd take that time, go out to visit my brother in Tahoe. And I was going to spend a week there snowboarding with him and his wife, and then come back for a week and visit with my girlfriend, Kate, who is now my wife. And what ended up happening was, like, we didn't really hear much about COVID when we were down there. Started to hear little weird things, but I don't know, if everybody remembers how fast everything happened and went into lockdown. I was actually home when everything went into lockdown. It was crazy. And as, I'll spare everybody details, as you all were there, but I was out in Tahoe when it happened, and I was trying to get a flight home back to the East Coast because I knew things were going to get kind of crazy, and it did. And I had so many flights canceled. It took me 24 hours to get back from actually ended up in Sacramento Airport instead of Reno, all the way back to Philly. And everything just went in lockdown. I made it back, but it was weird. I had never seen an airport so empty in my life. It was so strange. And got back to the East Coast, thankfully, just in time, and just everything went in lockdown. And I was locked away from my boat in Grenada all the way until around, I think, November it was. So, like, 8 months. And luckily, Sandy, thank you, Sandy, for taking good care of this pretty rig. He kept it nice, clean, started everything up for me a couple times a month, and just made sure she stayed right. So, you know, big shout out to Sandy for helping me through that little crazy time in my life. Kate and I decided, all right, we're just going to go for it here. And we packed up our bags. We flew down in November, and we quarantined in an apartment for a week. You know, they wouldn't let you out and about until you quarantined for 7 days, which we did that, and that was interesting, and go past all that. But anyway, we were there in Grenada, and things were seeming to start get better. Like, we were in December and then January, and it was, you know, we enjoyed it. It was great. Things were kind of open within Grenada, but, you know, nobody could easily fly in and out with that 1 week quarantine. But spent a lot of time on the boat just getting things right. Had to replace a bunch of stuff, just, you know, over time sitting not good for it. But did some fishing while we were there. My good friend Stephen Parkinson, who has the Rum Knuckles, 44-foot Henriques there, does charters in Grenada. And Sandy actually is mating for him now. So if you want to fish in Grenada when you're there, or if you want to go down there and experience what Grenada has to offer, let me know, and I'll hook you up with Steve Parkinson and Sandy. But anyway, we both just used our boats once a week to keep everything right and run it, and fishing was, of course, off the hook. It was awesome sail fishing, blue marlin, big tunas. I mean, it just was a blast. But things never really opened up, so we decided to go back to Curacao with the boat, and Kate and I did the move ourselves, like 400 miles due west of Grenada, all down sea, which was awesome. And I got to Curacao because Curacao was open, and we had some friends and family fly down there, and we did some fishing and boating and just kind of tried to get things going again, but never really did. And then we had to do a long move back, so we ended up doing 912 miles from Curacao to Long Island, Bahamas, one shot. And man, was it rough. Like, rough. I remember my good friend Harry, who mates for me sometimes from Curacao, he did the ride with me, and another friend Brad, and they're a huge help. But Harry struggled a little bit, and, you know, it was rough, and he was watching, and our helm was leaking. We were in the middle of the Caribbean. Like, there's nothing around. If you look at the chart from Curacao to DR, there's nothing. So anyway, it's rough, and I turn on the lights upstairs. I can see what's going on, and immediately he was like, Ricky, he's like, that messed me up. He started puking. But anyway, that was quite the experience, and we had planned to stop in Cap Cana, like we usually do, to refill, but if we did that, we were going to have to sit there and for 4 more days in quarantine. So that just was not going to work for us. We really need to be in the Bahamas and get things going. But we made it. Show me what the boat could really do. I don't ever want to do 912 miles again. That was pushing it for sure on fuel. But we made it. Everything went good. And, you know, fished our way up. Had a good summer up at home. And then at that point, you know, it was 2021. And we had made our way down. My mate Eric Carr then at the time was with me, and we were fishing the Bahamas on our way down. We were supposed to go to Curacao, and one of the nights when we were at the dock, I just heard Eric yell, "Ricky, fire!" And when you hear that, you think, wow, like, there's fire on a dock somewhere, something happened, but nope. And that was like the first night I closed my door, because it was the first like real hot day. So I just closed my door to turn the AC on and, you know, to keep it all in. I opened up a door, was hit by a wall of smoke, and run up the companionway. I look out back, you can see flames on the corner of my boat where the power cord was. And what had happened, what the fire inspector told me, was the power cord must have had a bad connection in the head. It was a brand new power cord. I just bought it because, you know, I just wanted to make sure everything was good. My other power cords I cut back so many times, I wanted to start fresh. So that was really disappointing that that's what happened, but it was scary. It was very scary moment. I've been on a boat with a fire before, the electrical fire on a generator, but we were able just to close the hatch, engine room hatch, and pull the halon pin and put it out. So it wasn't that bad, but this was pretty wild. Like, it wasn't a bad fire, but it was pretty hot because it had lit up all the rod holders on the side of the boat, and they were just molten, like, looked like molten hot steel, and they just would not go out. And we had to open a door, ran outside. I immediately turned on the DC water pumps, both the freshwater DC and the saltwater DC pump, because, oh, by the way, before we even got to this point, we hit it with a couple fire extinguishers, and they didn't do a thing. So immediately it was water. We knew we needed water, and a lot of it. So the fire extinguishers were not doing anything for us. Obviously, our power cords are all burnt up, gone, and also all of our lines from that side, which were holding us to the finger pier, were burnt up. So the wind was blowing pretty hard that night, and it was blowing us away from the dock. And we're in Long Island. The day before, my mate was cleaning the transom, and his hat fell off in the water, and the sharks just destroyed it. So the last thing you want to do here is fall in the water. And I was able to jump from the foredeck of the boat while Eric was spraying it down with water, and jump on the dock and grab the freshwater hose. And we just went to town for 2 hours, just keeping the fire at bay. And luckily, the damage wasn't terrible, but it was the smoke damage that was so bad. It's always that smoke damage and fire that really gets you. Like, the interior wasn't awful, but it was smoky and not, you know, it needed a lot of love. And burnt through the starboard side of my cockpit pretty good. It didn't make it all the way up to the bulkhead, thankfully. But the hull side above the waterline, everything below the waterline was sound. But above the waterline was thin. And it's like, oh, this is a nightmare. And I'm in Long Island, not an easy place to get to. But I got to say, my insurance company really pulled through. They had a surveyor there within 3 days, which is really impressive considering where I was in the world. And he came down and he cleared me. You know, I was like, hey, if I'm going to make it back to Florida to start work on this thing, I got to leave tomorrow. It was like a last flat calm day. Then it was going to blow for like the full forecast. The extended forecast 2 weeks is going to be 25 to 35 knots. And I was like, I did not want to get stuck here. That's going to get really expensive and leave me with nothing to do. So anyway, we were able to get everything started. I, under the stipulation, I was not allowed to turn on my generator in case, you know, some of the AC wires were bad and could, you know, start another fire and ignite the rest of the boat. So we ran her back, made it back in 1 day to Lauderdale from Long Island. I think it was 375 miles, and we were just cruising. Got home, got there, and we got up to Cable Marine. They hauled us out 2 days later and had the fire inspector come and did his due diligence. And, you know, it took a little time for insurance to go through, but I think within a month to 6 weeks, everything was good, and just kept piecing it together as we went, and got ServPro on the boat right away. And man, I gotta say, I think their slogan is like, it never happened. It's true. The interior of the boat was super clean, spotless. I mean, everything came up really good. They did a great job in the engine room, Lazarette. I mean, they did a great job with mitigating any sense of fire damage, and I was super impressed. We did a couple other things too, just to make sure there was never any smoke smell would come back. Really took our time rebuilding it back, and Cable Marine did a great job. I spent the whole time, Kate and I, running the place. Big thanks to my friend Dave for hooking us up with a place to stay for cheap and right near where the boat was getting rebuilt. And we moved down to Fort Lauderdale for the duration of the rebuild, which was all the way through till May. It was from January through May, 5 months and a lot of money later. Luckily, insurance covered the majority of it and got everything back to perfect and even better, because at that point I had ripped so much stuff out, I just started doing more. That's why, you know, some of the stuff insurance didn't cover was just me being very picky and anal that I am, and making the boat super perfect, and she came back together phenomenally well. So from there, we did a sea trial. Everything went good, and Eric and I were heading to Walker's Key to go fish the Walker's tournament, just to get things started again. And we were chugging and sucked the valve. on the port motor. So we turned back around, chugged back on one engine all the way back to Lauderdale, and they put us in a Cable Marine East, and yep, had sucked the valve, and at that point we were at rebuild time, and I ended up, they want to rebuild one side, I'm guessing the other side's close, so we just rebuilt both sides, which, let me tell you, was not in my budget. Over $200,000 to rebuild both, top to bottom, because I was going to do it, I want to do it right, and it was scary. Just got done spending a lot of money I didn't really have. I ended up, you know, selling my house to keep the boat during COVID, because I needed some cash, because, you know, the boat sat for a year, no income, and, you know, boat still requires dockage, insurance, and, you know, somebody to maintain it, so just bleeding money the whole time, and I had struggling, scrambling, trying to figure out how to secure a loan. I got able to figure out how to do the one side and got that rolling, the side that had blown. So during the first 2 or 3 weeks of that being rebuilt, I was scrambling trying to secure a loan, and I was lucky enough to, you know, have somebody that fishes with me help me out and help me find the right loan to be able to rebuild both sides, so I could, you know, keep this boat the way I wanted, which is, you know, 100%. So I wanted both sides to be right and know what I have going forward from the bottom up, and know the hours, know exactly what's going on, and have this thing ready to go for a long time to come. So it's definitely a scary moment. I was wondering if I was going to make it out alive with it or end up in massive debt. So, you know, it's on an owner-operator budget, it's tricky, definitely tricky. Spent a lot of time on that. It was like 2 months. Got the boat done just in time for the White Marlin Open. We hustled from Lauderdale all the way up to New Jersey, and we did that in 49 hours. Boat ran phenomenally well. Big thanks to South Shore Marine Diesel out of Miami that did the rebuilds. They, you know, very diligent. They did a great job, and they came together well. So I'm very, very happy with the work they did for me. And we just, you know, got everything rolling and had a good time fishing the rest of the season. Everything started to go smooth, and finally got in a good solid year in 2023. First full year with nothing super major. Did have a transmission issue that I dealt with for the second half of the season. Just ended up being a 4 second delay getting in and out of gear, but, you know, it wasn't a big enough deal to dig into until the season was over, which we did, and we ended up rebuilding transmissions. And I mean, man, this thing's had a lot of work done to it. So, you know, the boat's in great shape now, and here we are, 2024, really, really ready for a big year. Being an owner-operator is not the easiest thing in the world. Definitely, since I got this boat in 2019, the world has changed a lot, as you all are well aware, and everything has just become very expensive. So budgets have changed, and I keep this boat like a private boat. I want it to be perfect and ready to go and show well every day of the year. So if something's not right, I don't put it to the side. I fix it, and that can get quite costly, especially, you know, as much as we do use this boat. We use it a good amount, and, you know, just take very good care of it, and it is, you know, our lifeline a lot of these travels, so we keep it in perfect condition, and I really, really enjoy what we're doing here, and I love fishing. I'm looking forward to, you know, our season here in the Dominican Republic and making our way back to New Jersey and, you know, running charters out of Atlantic City this year, so I'm excited to be out of there. We'll be docked at Farley Marina, the Golden Nugget. If you want to go fishing with us in New Jersey, please reach out. If you want to go fishing with us, period, to reach out. You can reach out to us at info@euphoriasportfishing.com or just hit me up, CaptainRickyWheeler@gmail.com. There's a lot of ways to contact me. You just go to euphoriasportfishing.com, contact page goes straight to me. So love to have you out. I'd love to support. Like I said, we do have clothing on our websites, euphoriasportfishing.com. We have gear for the boat, and also saltwatereuphoria.com. We're working on more and more gear just for Saltwater Euphoria and this podcast. And I really appreciate all the support from everyone, and, you know, it means a lot how much everybody, you know, really helps each other out in this industry. And it, you know, pretty awesome. I really can't wait to see how 2024 goes, and keep trying to do this podcast, bringing you a podcast bi-weekly. And the way my schedule is, if I can keep up with that, I'm pretty happy, because that's already hard enough. Boat of my dreams. I never thought I'd have one like this, and it's very, very humbling how expensive these things are if you want to keep them right. But yeah, I really enjoy it. I enjoy the process. I mean, there are days where you want to bang your head on the wall and you're like, why do I do this anymore? I don't sell this thing. It's just crazy. He's spending too much money. But, it's all worth it in the end when it all comes together and you have those epic days and create those incredible memories with some great people. And I'm really, really lucky to a lot of the people that fish with me are just a lot of fun. And it's like fishing with friends every day. It's just a great time, and I really enjoy what I do here. So I hope to keep doing it for as long as I possibly can. But that's the story of Euphoria and how it came to be. I mean, like I said, it's a lot of things have changed throughout the time that I've had this boat, but I absolutely love it. It is an absolute fishing machine. It is the best riding boat I've ever been on and I've ever run. And I just feel very fortunate to be where I am. Busted my butt. My whole career is a sport fishing mate and captain, and saved every dime I possibly could. And I was fortunate enough to hit some of the right tournaments enough to pay off my student loans early in my 20s and be able to get to the point where I actually had a shot. And again, I got to really thank the previous owner of this boat for working with me and making it happen too. So, everybody needs a little help from time to time. And it's great when you surround yourself with good people. I'm very, very lucky. But this is how Euphoria came to be. And again, thank you so much for your support in every way. And for those of you that fish with me throughout my whole entire year, I appreciate you more than you know. Love having you all on the boat, and love to make more friends and get more people out here. And that's the whole point, is sharing experiences, making memories, and fishing's always a bonus. And man, do I love it. All right, we're going to jump into our segment of the podcast called Top Yachts, and it is my top yacht picks of the time of this podcast. And for those of you who don't know, I'm doing this because I am now a boat broker, and I just really, really enjoy looking at yachts online. I'm constantly perusing, especially different categories. And we have four different categories here, and what I'm going to start with on this podcast is I'm going to start with the sport fishing boats under 300,000. I just love this category because there are some gems, and pretty much any sport fishing boat you get for under 300,000, you got to expect is going to need a little bit of work. But this boat that I'm going to mention has already had a lot of work done to it, and it is ready to go. So it is a 1996 43-foot Viking Sportfish. And this boat is actually one that I just recently listed, and I think it's a really great deal. It is listed for $279,000 currently. And the recent owner has put a lot of upgrades into the boat, the biggest of which being rebuilt Cummins QSM11s with new transmissions, and that gives you a good 660 horsepower per side. So the boat will cruise at an easy 24 knots at the top end. That will exceed 30 knots. I mean, these engines only have 20 hours on them right now. Boat's ready to go, and the 8kW Onan generator has 1,600 hours on it, so lots of life left there. So this boat is a great deal for somebody looking to get into a boat in the mid-40s that they want to just be an owner-operator, maintain it themselves. It's a boat that can be fairly simple to work on and can check a lot of boxes. You can travel with this boat. You can go offshore to Mid-Atlantic. You can go through the Bahamas. There's a lot of things that you can do with a 43-foot Viking. And it's big enough inside. It's very comfortable. It's clean. And I think it's a great deal. For $279,000, it's a lot of boat. And all the things that a boat of this age usually needs replaced has been replaced. No electronics, radar. Like I said, the engines are new, so everything is ready to go, and I think it's a great deal. So that's my sport fishing boat for under $300,000. The next category are fishing center consoles, and I'm going to go with this one that is a 43-foot 2021 Jupiter, and right now it's listed for $899,000. It's actually located in northern New Jersey, and considering what it costs to get one built brand new right now, $899,000 a deal. I think they got to be around a 1.4, 1.5 range at this point. So you're getting a boat with only 400 hours. It has quad 425 Yamahas. It really is a super loaded boat. This thing, the owner spared no expense and there's everything you could possibly need in a boat. It even has a little cabin that's comfortable for making your long offshore trips much more comfortable, and it's just a pretty boat inside and out, and it will definitely fly, it will handle the sea, and it's just a great large fishing center console for those looking in that lower 40-foot class. And a lot of bang for your buck at $899,000 with this boat, and a lot of life to go. So it's 2021, nearly good as new. Definitely check that one out if you're looking for a larger center console. The next category is also one of my favorites because I just love custom boats, and this is the custom sport fishing boats. So this one in the custom boat category is a 52-foot 1994 custom Carolina style boat built by Brownell. And I'm not familiar with Brownell, and it is an older boat, but it has had a lot of upgrades done. And the deal at $625,000 for what this boat has and what it offers is pretty insane, in my opinion. But there is a little disclaimer there. I think it was recently donated to Maine Maritime Academy. So it's offered as a 3-year lease to purchase, but they said the terms are favorable. The boat looks beautiful inside and out. It's a very simple boat inside, but very clean and very nice. And it's definitely still private boat style. It's very pretty cold molded boat. And it has Caterpillar C12.9s, which put out 1,000 horsepower each. And they're 2016s. They were installed. And they boast that the boat can cruise at 30 knots with a top end speed of 35 knots. So this boat definitely checks a lot of boxes in the custom boat category. I guess if you're interested in it, you would obviously have to reach out and see what the lease terms are and how that all works. But it looks like a pretty awesome deal to me for $625, but that's just surface level. Now, last but not least, going to production sport fishing boats. This podcast, I'm going to point out a 2008 54-foot Viking. And right now, it's currently listed for $1.345 million. It's just a very pretty 54 Viking. You can tell it's been meticulously maintained. It's gorgeous inside and out. It's just a very pretty boat, and with 1550 mans in it, it's definitely going to fly. It is showcased as cruising speeds well over 30 knots. So it's just a great, great boat, and then that beautiful Viking finish inside, and then just really pretty, well-maintained boat on the outside. The only little hiccup I see is the one engine has been rebuilt, which, if you look at it this way, is actually not that big of a hiccup. So the one engine has 340 hours on it, and the other has under 3,500 hours on it. So they both should have a lot of life to go. So, you know, sometimes things happen, and it doesn't take much for one thing to go wrong to require a rebuild on one side. The other side can still go for a long time. That's it for this segment of Top Yachts. Again, if you want to see pictures of all these, check my story at Captain Ricky Wheeler. I'll put it in my stories, and it is in my saved and highlighted stories under Top Yachts. You can always see where they are and reach out to me if you'd like to know more about them. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Salt Euphoria Podcast. Thanks for always checking in. And if you have any questions or ideas or anything of that sort, you can reach out to us via email, which is podcast@saltwatereuphoria.com. Thanks again for listening.
This was another episode of the Saltwater Euphoria Podcast. If you want to find out more about all the things that were mentioned on this episode, visit saltwatereuphoria.com/podcast. Hit like and subscribe for more big game sport fishing, conversations with other sport fishing enthusiasts, and personal stories from the life of Captain Ricky Wheeler. This is Saltwater Euphoria Podcast. Till next time.